This is Renegade Broadcasting.
Ready! right, it is the General, another edition of the Aristocracy of Blood. It is October 17th, 2014. Just heard a band out of Finland called Ninuam, N-I-N-N-U-A-M, track called Godhead, and pretty good stuff there. So, yeah, guys, happy to be here with you. We've got Robert Ramsdell on the line. I'm going to go ahead and pick him up, and we're going to have a conversation for a little while. He's got some campaigning he wants to do tonight. So without further ado, I'm just going to get right into it, and we'll pull him up. Let's get him on here. It's 859. Is that you, Robert?
Yes.
How's it going, Dana? Great. All right, man. Let me just minimize this and go over here. All right, so how you doing, man? It's good to talk with you. It's been a while. I don't know if I've ever actually had you on. We've talked off air, but you're no stranger to Renegade Broadcasting. And I figured, you know, with the fact that you're kind of running for now, what are you running for, Congress or?
United States Senator from Kentucky. That's running against Mitch McConnell, current senator, which just happens to be, you know, I mean, I happen to be in a state where, you know, we have this guy who is for decades, absolutely decades. This guy's been in Congress for like 30 years, Senate, and has been one of the main, especially non-Jewish, servants of the pro-Israel lobby. Obviously, the Jews in the Senate and Congress are obviously going to be, you know, supporting Israel right on down the line. But McConnell has just received millions of dollars from AIPAC. I know I saw between like a 4 or 5 year period that was a sample given on the internet, it was like 300 some thousand, but that's just like a 3 or 4 year sample. So he's running against a Democrat by the name of Allison Grimes, and it's a United States Senate.
Okay, so Senate, pretty prestigious position, and of course you're running on a campaign of hate.
With Jews we lose.
Right, with Jews we lose.
Yeah.
Great. Sounds very familiar to, or kind of close to the, not V, dear, what's VNN, No Jews Just Right, you know, that website. But,
well, something just, you know, very to the point, and something that can cover just a number of things and just across the board. And, you know, I actually did get the idea from a cartoon, partially kind of altered it. It was a little cartoon. I think it was, from what I understand now, it's a guy by the name of Ben Garrison. And he with Jews, you lose. And I wanted to make it more of a thing where we're not kind of telling people, you know, something, but we're saying, hey, we lose with these Jews in power.
Right.
So, you know, that was... Yeah, that was something though that I decided on. You know, there's been a lot of preparation for this. I mean, I've been, you know, as far as the Senate run, I mean, this is something I started, you know, basically decided I was going to do as early as, early part of 2013. So, you know, it's certainly the middle part of that time period. So this is something I've been preparing for, and I think my preparation for the most part has paid off. I've been able to accomplish most of what I've set out to do, and even the things that they've, barriers up in front of me, I think it's gone a long way to show that, you know, it is absurd to say these people don't have the paramount stroke, overwhelmingly they are the ones who call the shots, who have the power, and nothing is going to get done relative to improving America, to putting our people and our race as white people back on an upward path again until we deal realistically with Jewish power and control over America and the world.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I think there's a big debate in white nationalism over, you know, whether to just completely ignore this topic and kind of gloss over it, or just pretend it doesn't exist, you know, for the sake of not offending people. But I think we're at a point where it is the central paramount issue of our time, and you know, if it's like you can't really hack at a tree and, you know, expect to get anywhere until you start cutting down the roots. And that's, you know, the octopus that we're dealing with. You've got all these symptoms of decay and corruption in society. And, you know, we see at the root of it all, they're always there. And, you know, it's not just them. It's a lot of our own people, too, who have betrayed us. But, you know, you have a lot of courage to get out there and, you know, do this publicly. So that's kind of what I wanted to get into, was just your campaign and what you've done so far. I remember you talking about radio ads a while back to see if you were able to get on there at all, and see what you're doing to get it out other than the internet. But ever since I saw you, Robert, on the Renegade Roadshow, when you popped up, I said to myself, you know, this guy's got charisma. He's got some fire in him. So I figured you would be popping up again in the future. And sure enough, here you are. So, yeah, I mean, how's it been going? What's any triumphs, defeats so far? What's the time scale? Do you really think you have a shot of maybe winning, or at least maybe, you know, a goal of getting the message out? What's your whole approach? And I'll just let you go from there.
Well, first of all, I mean, as far as, you know, the Jewish problem and you know, this idea that, you know, that there is this kind of divide, I guess, between, you know, white nationalists, as far as the Jewish issue. I mean, you know, if you're not going to talk about the facts when it comes to Jewish power, I don't even really know. I mean, I guess these people can call themselves white nationalists, but I mean, there have been, you know, I guess a few people that have had a problem with my approach, but I don't even see them as kind of, and I don't mean this, I don't know, I just, they're kind of on their own thing. I mean, they're doing their own thing, which is fine, but I don't even think that they're, I mean, they're really just responsible conservatives, are they not? I mean, just because they talk about race doesn't really separate them from just the typical conservatives. I got news for you. Most white Republicans talk about, you know, black crime. They talk about, you know, the realities of racial differences around their dinner table. So, I mean, just because you're going to talk about, you know, racial you know, differences, you know, I guess advocate for the white race. I mean, I guess that's what, you know, not what most white Republicans do, but most whites who vote for Republicans want them. I mean, and the reason they don't get anywhere is because they don't talk about the Jewish issue. So, I mean, you know, it's I don't know, man. I don't know, you know, how these people expect to win. But I mean, you know, I don't know why they have to attack people like me and why they have to blame people. It's like, you know, these people that want to, like, blame, you know, if they don't end up accomplishing something, it's not because all they did was sit on the internet, you know, it's because I went out there and did something. I mean, it's just, you know, save it.
I don't think what you're doing by being explicit and open is quote-unquote counterproductive. I mean, in the way that, you know, dressing up in a Klan uniform or an SS uniform might be, you know, you're just, because you're pointing out facts and you're just saying it like it is, you know, you have charisma and you can articulate your points and, you know, you're a smart guy. So
I'm not saying you are. I'm saying there's been other people. And the thing is, they're talking about me like I am out there in a damn Klan robe, or I am out there in a uniform, or whatever. So, I mean, you know, they really need to just stick to what they're doing. And, you know, I'm not going to harm anybody, you know, because, you know, I don't know, man. I can understand. I don't want to have this whole broadcast be on this topic. But the thing is, you know, I can understand people on our side picking times to talk about the Jewish issue. I, for example, was in Louisville on Tuesday, folks, and I spoke because I was invited, and this wasn't like the UK invitation, because the UK invitation, the professor actually knew, you know, about me. In this case, they just sent off. What you people have got to realize is, if you, you know, this system is not perfect. This system is not absolutely just, you know, as much power as the Jews have. It is not. If you try, if you make an effort, if you just, you know, for once do something besides just complain about something, or just do the internet thing, or be so pessimistic about someone like myself doing what I'm doing. And when I say just the overall, you know, I'm the only person running, you know, this year as a white nationalist that I know of, you know, and it shouldn't be the case.
That's all I can. Yeah, but, you're the only one I can think of.
You know, but during the course of all this, and I'm going to mention it now only because pretty much every opportunity now, I mean, if I had another one waiting for me, then I probably wouldn't even let on this, because, you know, the Jews are already just in just turbo mode to silence this campaign after the initial splash of, and I'll get to that. But I've been sent probably, I got them at home, I could count them up, probably like a dozen invites from, you know, like, for candidates. Now, why, who would say, okay, well, how is Robert Ramsdell, who is running as a pro-white candidate, getting these invites? And I'll tell you, you know, these people, I assume what's happened is they've went on the Secretary of State's website, or they've got a big master list of people who have just registered. And because I registered, they've sent this to my address just like they sent it to the other candidates. You know, they haven't went and checked. And this is the kind of stuff where, you know, I've been getting this stuff in the mail over these period of months here. And, you know, it's because I made an effort and tried. And sure enough,
these are
Tuesday
what?
Invitations
to speak at events or what? Like
invitations to show. I mean, for example, that day when I went to the UK speech, I actually had to pass up an opportunity to go to this seniors picnic. It was like a picnic where political candidates were invited to, like, talk to the seniors. It was at a local county here. And I had to actually pass that one up because it turned up on the same day that I was invited to UK. But they invited me to this thing, you know, sent me this thing in the mail, and you know, I was going to be able to put out my campaign literature there. And with them being a government entity, I'm not sure if they could have actually pulled my literature. You know, these people do whatever the hell they want, regardless of the law, it seems. But, I mean, it wasn't like it was a private event. Now, on Tuesday night, I spoke at a church. I'm not going to name the church, and I'm not going to name the organization because I don't want it to get in trouble. But this was an organization that is a national organization, and is actually, because of their stance, especially on homosexuality, I found out afterwards, they're actually on the SPLC's, like, list or something. But this church had, like, 50 people for this candidates forum, and I was the first one to speak. Now, I did not talk. I did not bring up the J word. So what I'm saying to these, like, white nationalists, you know, that maybe didn't get it to me is, I mean, I can understand at times kind of picking your spots to maybe, you know, be strategic in not talking about the Jews, because this was just like any mainstream church. I mean, hell, they had a freaking Israeli flag along with a bunch of other flags in their church, and, you know, that was visible there with me speaking. But I got up there and spoke for 4 minutes and was applauded. At the end, I talked about basic issues of the family, talking about how the media makes it a hostile environment to raise children, and I was applauded by these people. So, I mean, I'm not, you know, as much as some of these, you know, people have criticized me, which, like I said, I mean, I'm somebody that, you know, I really take it seriously, this cause and maintaining a good you know, the image. Proper image, and, you know, and it's just like, these things, I mean, I like I said, I mean, just kind of hearing some of these people talk and learning about some of these people, it's really like, man, they're just responsible conservatives. They're not even racist.
Yeah.
I mean, they're not even, you have to talk about the Jew. There's no way you can. It's just, it's so there, you know, and you're not going to ever sneak anything by these people. You're never going to, you know, get to a point where, oh, boy, you suckered them, and now they're just, you know, now we can talk about them because we've won, because we've been promoting, you know, anti-racist as a code word for anti-white or whatever.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't see why these people, though, it really, because, you know, it's very convenient for them to be able to later on say that, oh, well, because I ran for U.S. Senate, you know, I created a bad image, and it was all my fault, you know, that they couldn't do their job. It's like, you know, all I see, most of them is just on the internet, And then they attack people who actually take their message to the public.
It comes down to cowardice, man. That's all it really is. You know, they're afraid to do what's necessary. And I agree with you that that sense of action that you have is what differentiates true revolutionaries from conservatives. You know, it's the reason why I really despise conservatives who have kind of been holding us back for so long. You know, I'd rather hear more radical thought and action, even if it defies, you know, a traditional type of approach, because at this point we're just the ship's going down. So I think there are two strategies. There's a metapolitical strategy of trying to create a subculture, which is what countercurrents, you know, tries to do with the more intellectual approach and getting into that stuff and philosophy and whatnot. But, you know, and then there's people like you who are just hardcore, you know, ideologically driven. I wouldn't say you're a purist, but you are kind of a vanguardist in that you just believe in confronting the enemy head on and just, you know, telling the people the truth for once.
Like, you know, they can call the truth radical, man, but it's like, I mean, our people, you know, I mean, when you have these damn Jews that are coming out just all the time and they're just being just open about their power and you've got all these statements and stuff, it's like, you know, our people can sense when, you know, you're not telling all the truth or you're back on your heels or you're worried about the enemy. And I've said it a lot of times before, it can't be said enough. We can't allow the enemy to dictate our policy. Are never going to give you this idea that some of these white nationalists like want the respect of the enemy, or they want to be regarded as or they want to be liked or accepted or seen as not a Nazi. You're never going to have that. I don't care if you don't talk about the Jews. If you in any way stand up for white identity or solidarity, then you are never going to get it. You have to take it. You have to fight for it, and you have to tell all the truth, and you have to refuse to try to you know, why should we try to curry favor with these people? It's just disgusting. But let me get to the campaign.
Sure.
This past week, there's been a lot of events that have happened. I have to say, folks, that I'm pretty much convinced now that after that big splash where, you know, over a 24-hour, you know, slightly in a 48-hour period, I had, you know, I guess the SPLC guy that wrote the article said I was wreaking havoc. I don't know. I mean, you know, these Jews have been wreaking havoc on our country for a long time. I'm just, you know, happened to have a couple events that back-to-back was, you know, the unveiling of my signs making news within 24 hours and then me being up in Lexington the next day at the speech. I really think now, I mean, it kind of surprised me, quite honestly, through my experience over the years, whenever I've went out as far as public activism against the Jews, the news in the past has kind of ignored that. I even had a time where I was doing something and they actually came out with a reporter and took a report and the report never aired. So, I mean, these Jews don't like blowing the whistle on their power. They know there's so many people out here. So I was kind of surprised, actually, when that news coverage hit like it did. Now, I think they really have just, you know, given the order, silence this campaign as much as you can. And, you know, it's all about now adjusting and trying to, you know, find ways to go around this. Now, I was in Louisville on Monday and Tuesday of this week, and engaged in a number of different activities, not only with culminating Tuesday at the end of it all with this speech at this church. And I actually set up at the Louisville airport. I don't know if people realize there's a lot of airports across the country that have like a free speech or free expression zone that you can actually apply for a permit. And that you can actually stand, you know, with signs, or, you know, you can give out materials there at an airport. Now, I had tried to do this in the Cincinnati airport here near me, and they denied me the permit, even though, like, not too long ago, maybe like a year ago, these guys for Lyndon LaRouche, I don't know, some people might be familiar with this guy, his guys were set up at the airport with a picture of Obama, like these big posters with Obama with a quote-unquote Hitler mustache. So they allowed them out there. Now, according to the police chief that I spoke to, he claimed that the that they altered their policy. Now, their rules as far as this permit and the application, they contradict themselves because at one point it says there can be no denial of a permit for the material or whatever the message is, deny it based upon what your message is. But then they added this thing, and this is what they used, questionably legal, by the way, for them to do this. They have said that because that I may incite lawless action among. So basically what they're saying is because some Jews might get pissed off and act out in a violent way, that's my problem. According and enough to keep me from having this permit granted to me. Well, anyway, you know, so many people of our people in this fight that is, you know, some of them who do try stuff, I don't know, that there's so much like this, like, you know, give up, you know, and if you know, you can't be like that and get anything done. So anyway, I went ahead and applied for this Louisville permit, and I was actually told by the guy at the Louisville airport that they actually did run it by their lawyers. That they knew of me, which I didn't know if they knew of me, but I found out they did end up knowing of me. I'm finding out so many people now that I'm encountering, they've got word of me. Luckily, the Louisville Church, you know, had they covered, say, any of my activities on the Monday there, see, it works kind of, it can be a win, because had the media not ignored what I was doing there on Monday, which I can almost be sure, you know, they monitor police scanners, and I'm sure that they were getting calls at the airport, because I know for a fact that, you know, the airport police would call. So, you know, I'm sure they would have heard this more than likely. They just chose not to come out. But that ended up being to my benefit, because had there been a news story there in Louisville that Monday, who knows, someone at the church could have seen it, and I might have been disinvited, probably would have been. I was put in a place at the airport. I mean, you know, it was kind of, the airport's not very busy there in Louisville, and it was okay. I mean, the place that I was going to get to set up at the Cincinnati airport would have been a lot better as far as just the amount of people that were going to be going by you. But I met up, Dana, with a fellow by the name of Joseph Roundtree in Louisville. This was a man who was beaten by a gang of blacks back in April 2013. Four-on-one attack. One of the blacks, the one that was arrested, the only one, went on his Twitter page after the attack and bragged. He said he beat that white pussy like Emmett Till. Now this shows how the Jew media incites these blacks to attack white people. Now his this arrest was in July of 2013, the Monday, October 6th, the Monday before I went down this week, it was a week from this past Monday, he had his case dismissed by the prosecutor for a lack of evidence. They have told him that because the one of the black attackers erased it, even though there's a website that took a screenshot of his post, that they can't use this. Now, again, four white guys attack a black guy. Oh, and they're going to get away with it because they erased their Twitter post after that? I highly, highly doubt it. Now, let me come back to that. I met with Joe there in Louisville. My original plan, when he had contacted me a few months about he had contacted me in September, and my original plan was I wanted to get him on one of the shows. One of the radio shows that I had paid for and that were illegally canceled and pulled by 55KRC. I wanted to have him come on as a guest for an hour and talk about what had happened to him. And, you know, because he's really pursued this case. You know, he's pretty racially aware. He's a racially aware guy. And, you know, he's you know, been very frustrated at how long it dragged out. And now it's, you know, being dismissed. And, because the shows were pulled, you know, I contacted him afterwards. I said, you know, I'm going to try still to do something for you, Joe. I want to come through and help you out in some way. So I had on October 6th, the day he got his case dismissed, I had filed online for a meeting with the mayor, tried to arrange a meeting with the mayor online. That's how you know, they instructed me to do it, go on the website and contact them by email. Well, you know, this is an example of how we as white nationalists, and I'm one guy doing this. You know, I put a hell of a lot of preparation in this campaign, a lot of, pre-planning and strategically going about it. But, you know, you could fairly say, you know, I'm going at this thing, you know, the sweet of my, you know, as one guy, you know. I mean, I'm kind of amazed at what I'm being able to do, because on Wednesday of a week from this past Wednesday, I get a call from the police captain there, Dana. And
wow.
And the police captain is telling, you know, he's shocked or, you know, seems surprised that Joe had his case dismissed. And I said, you know, I'll have Joe tell you, call you and tell you what happened. And, you know, he was unaware of it. I guess he was somewhat aware of the case, but the mayor's office had passed along my message to him. So we had the police captain there, the Louisville Police Department, contacting me. Now, on Friday, a week from today, a week ago today, I had contacted the mayor's office because I hadn't heard back from them about the meeting. So I left a message with someone who I was switched to their voicemail, and I never heard back. Well, Monday, we're there on the steps. We do have pictures of this there. I actually met up with another lady there by the name of Nancy. Another supporter there has contacted me along the way and along the campaign. And we go up to meet with the mayor. We go up to the building there with the mayor, city building there, and enter the doors, and there's this big, fat, out of shape, I don't know, she might have had a lazy eye, the picture picked it up really well, her eye was just kind of weird, and this big, fat blob, and I go up and I say, my name's Robert Ransdell, I'm here to meet with the mayor here with Joe Roundtree. And she says, well, you can't see the mayor. And I said, well, I arranged a meeting with him. He said, well, you can't see the mayor. And I said, well, why not? She goes to get like something. She's seated at this desk, which is kind of like high desk, where she's like, you know, I'm kind of like looking down at her in this desk, and I can't see behind, you know, what's on her desk. And she grabs something, and I'm thinking it's going to be like a schedule thing, and it's not going to have my name on it. Dana, she had a picture of me. They had given her a picture of me. It's the one with the bullhorn that was actually published in the Courier Journal article. It was from 2012 when I held a rally for Pat Mahaney, a black on white crime victim, a white victim of black crime in Cincinnati, North College Hill. We had a rally for him. You know, to reveal the hate crime hypocrisy and to stand, against that and against this ongoing race war we have in this country. North College Hill, which is formerly a majority white area, you know, had integration directed at it and provided that environment where Pat was beat up less than a year he died. They have that picture on there, and she actually had it on this piece of paper. So they were ready for me and were willing to, you know, even though I've got a victim of violence in their city here, I had even specified in the, and I was very, you know, cordial in the email. I said, you know, I only was asking for 15 minutes, you know, wanted to discuss, why Joe's case hasn't gotten any kind of support from the mayor. I mean, when you have elected officials in Missouri saying, there was a high-ranking official in Missouri that came out and said that that Joe Wilson, the police officer who shot that thug, Michael Brown, there was somebody in Missouri, I don't know if it was a federal official, a U.S. senator, or a state senator, that said that there should be a swift prosecution of that officer. So that proves that what he had wrote, Joe Roundtree had wrote the mayor a letter a while back, and he had gotten back saying that he couldn't intervene in the judicial process. Well, not only did, you know, that Missouri official do that, but this is the same mayor here in Louisville, a guy by the name of Fisher, who in March, when there was black mob violence, a day of it in Louisville earlier this year, late March, came out and, because there was so much anger and frustration on the part of whites online about these these blacks in Louisville attacking whites. And he came out and specifically made this statement saying that the attacks were not racial and all this talk is unfounded and all this. So I mean, this guy obviously comes out and stands up in you know, to call down the anger of whites. But now when we're trying to, you know, get justice for Joe here, he doesn't want to talk to me. So, you know, I thought that was, you know, the fact that they would have a picture down there, I don't even know if they even had the right to deny me entrance in this public building, but we left. We go over to the prosecutor's office. We go to the prosecutor's office, and we ask for Jessica Moore there, who was the prosecutor that dismissed his case. Well, we end up getting met with a guy who is one of her higher-ups. And, you know, I have to say that through doing this, we got 5 minutes in this guy's office. He at least goes through the song and dance of acting as if he's going to do something. We will see if he does. He did call back Joe that day. I highly doubt it's anything more than it's probably not going to go anywhere. This prosecutor actually snapped at me at one point at the end of this. Now, interesting thing, because I had you know, pretty much let Joe, you know, tell his story. At first, this guy was wanting to take Joe back by himself, and then I said, you know, I'm not his lawyer, but I'm here, and so is Nancy, the lady that, you know, was the third person of the group. And, you know, Joe said, yeah, you know, they're fine coming back here. Now, this guy's door was open, and there was a black woman, one of the workers, a government worker there, right outside. So when I say to this guy that, you know, had a group of white, you know, kids beat up a black guy, I don't think it would have went 15 months and then got dismissed. And he says, well, I've been a detective for a long time, and that's just simply not the case. And, you know, I mean, yeah. You know, what an idiot. I mean, he's doing this more than likely because this black woman's out there. We're getting up at the end, and this honestly shocked the hell out of me because, man, I mean, I can be, you know, forceful. I can be, you know, angry or whatever, but I really wasn't. I could even, like, cut people off, but I didn't. And toward the end of the thing, after I had made that statement about the hypocrisy of having a group of white teens, I pretty much sat there for a couple minutes. We were in there maybe 5 minutes and let Joe kind of tell, you know, give him details. This guy was, you know, writing down details of the case and all this stuff. Things have been 15 months. I go to basically say, you know, I'd have to disagree with what you said. I get like a couple words out, and he's like, don't raise your voice at me or interrupt me in my office. Yeah. I turned over to Nancy. I said, did I raise my voice? Me and Nancy leave, and Joe stays behind with the guys. We're all walking out, kind of stays behind with him for a couple minutes. Joe comes out after a couple minutes, meets me and Nancy, and he tells me that the guy had told him that he should be leery of people like me. And he even told us during the meeting, he said that this isn't the way to go about it, talking about highlighting the racial aspect. What would happen to this guy if he talked like this to a black leader? What would happen, you know, and what is the way to go about it? If it's went 15 months, you know, the fact is when Joe contacted me, I told him, I said, are you sure you want, you know, I told him, I was like, there are things to be lost here. I mean, you know, if you have me advocate for you, there's a chance that, you know, they may not pursue things. And Joe was just like, man, this thing has went on for 15 months. You know, I really don't think I've got much to lose at this point. And I want to have this thing, you know, have attention put on this thing. And,
this is what bothers me about the whole movement itself is just the lack of support. You mentioned a lot of white frustration, but again, it's all on the internet. When something happens to us, we don't organize and go out there and force and start banging on doors and, you know, with loudspeakers and, you know, I mean, it's when something happens to them, it's like all hell breaks loose, you know, and the system is already on their side completely. Like you said, you can't even bring this stuff up, and it's total suppression. So, I mean, the fact is, I can see what you're saying about your campaign here. That's something good that's coming out of it, if not just raising awareness to an event that happened, which might be able to change some minds. Because it seems, Robert, that a good bulk of our people aren't even awake to the fact that this is an anti-white system, let alone, you know, a Jewish-dominated anti-white system. So, I mean, that's really kind of where we're at, because you can't fight blindfolded with two hands tied behind your back, and that's kind of where we are. We don't have networks and lawyers and people behind you to lead the charge. You're just one guy with limited resources, and, you know, that's the part of it all that just really bothers me, is it makes you want to throw your hands up and just, you know, do nothing. But when we see someone like you get out there, it empowers us, because it gives us courage, shows that, you know, one guy can get a lot of people to start to see things our way. And so what if, you know, you don't get a huge percent of the vote? It really doesn't even matter at this point. It's almost like it's just advocacy. You're a community organizer, you know, and eventually,
well, you know,
I mean, this is not going to be handed to us. It's not going to be handed to us. I mean, we are so far behind right now. Anything is positive in my view. So that's why I really support your efforts.
Well, dude, I mean, I am surprised. I am even surprised at what, you know, and I can't stress enough how, you know, if we have, man, I mean, if I can do what I've been able to do with this, if we can just get some more people active, man, we are going to make some serious waves. I mean, I have, during the course of this, after making that UK speech, I actually had, anyone who read the Courier Journal article, the Louisville Courier Journal article that was published, I think September 18th or 19th, something like that, they actually got, and again, and this is something where our people can see a distinction that, wow, boy, these Republicans and Democrats being, you know, and again, in reality, we know this is this Jewish puppet show, Republican, Democrat. Boy, they never agree on anything, but wow, Alison Linderman Grimes and McConnell's campaign, because of the uproar that happened about that, were actually put on record. The reporters contacted their campaigns, and both of them came with their condemnations of my campaign. Never would I have thought that would have happened, that I would have had their campaigns directly. You know, I've already had one McConnell event where I've been outside of here. I wanted to be at a Grimes one that was here recently, but it was at a time when I was, I had to be at work, you know, so I couldn't be there. There's another McConnell event I'm planning on going to. A lot of these you don't hear about until after they've taken place. I mean, I'd be at every one when he's down here. But, you know, so, you know, maybe at some point I was, you know, going to get their attention, but never did I think that they would be making a statement. Never did I think, Dana, that never did, I mean, I had plans for this, again, put, you know, I thought I would make some waves, but this past week, now the debate that took place between Grimes and McConnell was on Monday of this week. It was on KET. Now, the Libertarian candidate, who's actually the third guy on the ballot, then there's three write-in candidates, myself and two others, actually sued KET, not allowing him to participate. Now, I had contacted KET back in May and expressed interest and declared to them my intentions to participate in the debate. I was officially registered candidate with the Secretary of State, and went about things. Now, a lot of people would said, you're crazy, you're stupid for doing that, that's completely no way you're ever going to be included, you're just a white nationalist, you're just a write-in candidate, that's a waste of time. Well, you know what? It turns out that my campaign was mentioned over and over and was a main part of the Libertarian candidate's argument that he should be included. And in fact, this guy came out when this suit was filed and was claiming that it's funny because he actually released a statement too after the UK thing. It wasn't in the Courier Journal article, but he actually came out and condemned me too, the Libertarian. And in that condemnation, he said that my campaign was a part of the reason that he was being excluded from the debate. Now, at the time, I was like, man, this guy's an idiot. He's just, like, blaming me. He's wanting to look good, condemning the so-called racist, the quote-unquote racist, and he's trying to be included and whatever. They had established criteria. They sent me back in May. Now, at the time, I didn't know what was, going on behind the scenes. Now, KET is a government, they take public money. So this guy was able to make public records requests, and his lawyer got their emails and all this stuff. This is huge. I've been posting this on Stormfront and VNS, kind of limited. You know, my main campaign thread people are following, but I think this is one of the biggest things that's happened here. Because through this criteria that was established, they sent me four things. They said you had to have a campaign website, you had to make public appearances as a part of the campaign, which I have, and then they said that you have to be polling at 10% at a reputable poll, and then this is the most glaring thing here. They said that any candidate who participates in the debate must show that they've received $100,000 in campaign contributions. Now, most people in this country have an idea that this two-party system is fixed and that very, very rarely is a third-party candidate able to do it. If that is not just an outright statement of we are not going to give you any choice except for Jewish puppet A, the Democrats, and Jewish puppet B, the Republicans. I mean, if that is not an outright just declaration of that. Now, in the lawsuit, there were emails that, and this brought me to an understanding that Patterson wasn't just blaming me. That it shows in these emails during this hearing, and I'm going to be getting a full account. I'm going to be paying for a full transcript of these, because I want to know exactly what was said. But in the judge's order, which is, I actually posted online, it's mentioned in there that they were basically looking for ways to exclude me from the debate, that they were looking for ways, they were concerned that I would be included on there. There was some black woman who actually hosts a minority TV show, a show for minorities on KET, that was quoted in one of the emails as calling me a quote-unquote nut, and there were other emails saying claiming that I didn't know about election law or whatever because I was maintaining that as a candidate I had a right to be on these debates. So essentially, we through running this campaign, I have had an effect to not only be mentioned. By the way, the lawyers during this hearing, according to the judge's order, actually mentioned with Jews we lose in a federal court. With Jews we lose was mentioned in a federal court during this lawsuit with the Libertarian, which was on a speedy basis. They had a hearing on Thursday of, you know, last Thursday, a week from this past Thursday, that lasted from 9 a.m. until 2, and then from 2:30 until 4. I spoke to the court reporter who was there. I was actually on a telephone conference, a conference call. They had an initial hearing two Fridays ago, and I actually called into this. I called the Frankfurt. This is how much I'm keeping up on this stuff. I was hoping that if Patterson actually won this lawsuit, that I would be able to insist to KET that I have to be included. They've just said that your criteria are illegal. So I was keeping tabs on this for, you know, a better part of a week after I heard about the lawsuit. Well, I found out that they were having this hearing that Friday. I actually called in and was a witness to this meeting. It was announced on there. They knew I was on the call. I couldn't say anything, and the judge even said that. He's like, "Oh, Mr. Ransdell, this is a public hearing, and you're welcome to listen, but you can't say anything." You know, so never did I think I would be able to do this. And again, if I'm able to do this as one person, and if I'm able to prompt the police and this prosecutor at least to go through the motion of reanalyzing Joe's case, then this is just it really makes me happy. And to come through for, like, with Joe, you know, I've gotten a lot of donations from people along the way, and it was able to free up some personal funds. You know, this fellow, I've learned that, you know, he lost his mother and father. He's pretty much on his own down there, and you know, he's I went ahead he actually mentioned his birthday. It was coming up in November, and we were just talking. I was about to give it to him anyway because we were walking back to cars to go our ways, go our separate ways for the day. I gave him $100. Just said, you know, go buy yourself a birthday present or something. And I think that's what we need to do. We need to advocate for these people. We need to be there for them. We need to, you know, when they're victims of black crime like this, this is something directly in our ideological purview. Rather than just post online and complain about what's going on with them, rather than just, you know, give them a pamphlet about black-on-white crime or whatever. We need to advocate for them. We need to support them. And, you know, and again, we can't afford as a movement right now to just, you know, just give them money. But, I mean, you know, we need to show we care. We need to show that we're more than just ideologues. We're going to be there to help you. We have to, you know, that's how we have to, you know, we see this in Europe. I mean, I take my cues from what's going on in Europe in that way, because, I mean, look at the way Golden Dawn, how they've gotten the support of the people and other nationalist groups there for actually advocating and helping and having these food drives and protecting the people as they go to and fro from these gangs of, you know, immigrant non-whites that are attacking them. You know, that gets to their heart, man.
Well, the thing is, you know, we're working with 50 years of brainwashing propaganda, all these Jewish archetypes and mind control philosophies, like everything that they've instilled in the people. You know, we're really behind Europe in that regard, where you have half of our people who, if they're either totally unconscious or they actively have joined the ranks of the other side. So this is it's problematic in a number of ways, but still, you know, Europe has its own problems. I read that in Hungary, I guess there was a National Policy Institute conference that was canceled. And, you know, this is a country that has, like, you know, the Jobbik Party and a lot of openly anti-Jewish agitation. So, you know, Europe is, it's just all around. There's no escape now. And the sooner we get people on the ground to start doing footwork like you, you know, the quicker there will be reverberations outwards, you know, because we can't expect anything to happen until people realize that there's folks out there who know this stuff and you know, aren't afraid to say it. So until that actually comes to fruition, I don't know, but I really do applaud what you're doing. And it's I want you to give your website out, like how people can contact you or maybe donate to the campaign, and let us know, like, your timetable. I wanted to catch up and hear your interview with Giuliani and some other people, because I know that you spoke at a school too or something. So I mean, you're having more of an impact as one man than 100 white nationalist websites. You know, I mean, that's the
thing. I mean, it's not just like, yeah, the website's whiteguard.us. Whiteguard.us is the website, and my PO box is PO box 6083, Florence, Kentucky 41022. And you know, not only is what I'm doing, I mean, it's encouraging, but, you know, making the system react, you know, that's what I think is just so important for us to do, because it really, you know, for them just to sit back and not have to react, you know, they're going to make mistakes when they do. And when they, it makes it easier for, you know, the perceptive people that may be, like, on the fence to see that when I'm getting all this resistance from the system, and I am, I mean, it's just, you know, the way that they've just flaunted this damn law that federally you're supposed to be guaranteed the time to get on the radio. And, you know, you talked about votes earlier. You know, had I been able to do that, I really believe, you know, when I filed earlier in the year, I really had no idea, you know, what I wasn't really even concerned with you know, how many votes I was going to get. But, you know, I really believe that I could, through 7 weeks, man, that was the plan. And see, 7 weeks to be able to you know, come back every week, that would have had something where I would have been able to really grow an audience, I think. I think people would have been, you know, word of mouth would have gotten around by the third or fourth week. I mean, this thing would have really been, you know, a hell of a firestorm. So, I mean, who knows, there might have been a few thousand votes I might have been able to tally. At this point, you know, I was online yesterday, and I saw there was, like, the Topics website. There was a way down in Hazard, Kentucky, they were talking about me. So, I don't know, I mean, as far as, you know, a lot of the support I've gotten have been from people out of the state who aren't going to be able to vote for me. but I'm going to be sending some mailings out through different parts of the state. I'm going to actually have, like, packets of information, put as much in as I can and still, you know, come up to the regular rate of postage, 49 cents, and, you know, send these to different parts of the state. I was actually, when I was in Louisville this past week, I was in my hotel room there, stayed the night, Monday night, and was going through the phone book, and I had a big thing of envelopes there with a pen, and I was going through and marking the envelopes with the addresses of some of the people there. You know, I was basically readying myself. So, I know there's online stuff. You can get that, you know, address information or mailing list, but I kind of do it the old-fashioned way, I guess. But anyway, making the system react is something that it proves our point, you know. I mean, when it comes to these radio ads, and I've said this a number of times, you know, we can go to the public and say, you know, these ads were pulled. I'm running a campaign that's speaking out about Jewish power. Are you folks out there with a brainstem actually going to tell me that this was like, you know, the black Zulus over in Africa, or these Hutu people, and the Inuit Indians got together and they're concerned about the Jews? No, it's these Jews, and they're flexing and showing their power. So, I just think that that is beneficial for us to really display that, these Jews are the people that have this control and power. And then it's not, liberals, because you can criticize liberals all you want. You can criticize the rich. It's a pastime in this country. But, you know, if you criticize the Jew, then you will discover who controls everything at the root of all the power and control and over the society rests with, and you're never going
Voltaire,
to...
Voltaire said, you know, you want to find out who's in control, just figure out who you can't criticize. And that's really where we're at. I think that there's a number of positive things that can come out of this as well. If you look at the left, for instance, they hate the idea of Citizens United and campaign contributions and just the money in politics. And a lot of those people, you know, would be natural enemies of you. But, you know, if you really look at it, if you can just expose the fraud of the system as it is, and the lack of a democracy and the lack of free speech, you know, and just how it's all they pay lip service to all these ideals that we know are complete, utter nonsense. I mean, it's there's anybody who comes out with anything controversial that points towards power. Even someone like Ron Paul, who is the furthest thing from a white nationalist, he was still going after some through indirect means the Jewish power structure with the Federal Reserve System. You know, and just you can see how the system came down on him, how the machinery went against him. So you're someone like you, you're basically just coming out with it without even really, you're not playing games, and you're just saying it as it is. So I'm hoping that the few people out there who you know, aren't total idiots and have a brain, a working cognitive brain in their head, you know, will at least, at the very least, give you moral support, if not monetary support, or be inspired. More and more people start talking. I mean, that's the thing. It's like this Ferguson stuff, and look at the cops, and, you know, I mean, eventually you're going to have more and more incidents that show that there is a racial divide in the country, and whites are going to be forced to either submit or take their own side.
They're going to be forced with this Ebola thing to really reevaluate things. You know, you want to start dying this horrible death from this disease, or and do you want to continue to listen to these people say that we can't do this, we can't do that, we can't do this because God knows if we ban the travel of these people here, oh, it's racist, and this absurd crap we're being told that if we ban travel, it's only going to make it worse or whatever. If we isolate that country, it's only going to make it. I mean, it's just this stuff is going to get to the point where I mean, you know, those who are still going to be with the system, we don't even want them. Why do we even want these people? They're so slavish. They're so just idiotic and just absolutely cowards. I mean, you know, we'd have no use for them anyway. It's going to bring millions of people who have some sense of what's going on or some sense of common sense, you know, to come to our side, at least be more receptive to our ideals, and that, you know, we are not the crazy ones. The crazy ones are the ones that are saying that, you know, we're just going to continue, we're going to put these flawed values, policies of multiculturalism, diversity, we're not going to let those ever be challenged, no matter how many people start dying of this. I mean, it's just that they're going to be revealed as they're nuts, they're insane, they're purposely running this country into the ground. You know, I think
a disease like Ebola, and the way it's I mean, the media, I mean I'll be honest, I think a lot of it is sensationalized, but it is a terrible disease and we don't want it in our country. And you know, the fact that we have such lax immigration laws and the fact that anybody can just walk in here, especially from an area where there's an epidemic like this, it's just insanity. It just goes to show that, I mean, we have no real government that is serving the people. I mean, it's and then they want us to, you know, they want us, I guess Obama now is going to be, he just signed something to send troops into what is it, Liberia or wherever, to try to build hospitals to help contain the outbreak, you know. And it's just,
you know,
who knows, maybe we deserve, maybe this is maybe what will happen is just more and more people will realize that this is insane. Now their physical health is threatened by, you know, liberalism, which is at the root of it all, just you know, this Jewish mind control. So,
well, you
I mean,
know, and they'll say that we're, you know, to advocate white nationalist ideals in this way, that, you know, to appeal to people that oh, well, we'll be taking advantage of their fear. I mean, it's righteous fear, and we should. I mean, at some point we have to be, you know, I don't know.
It's not fear that is unwarranted or is being emotionally driven. It's fear that is biologically based in reality and what's going on around us. You know, we see, you know, I mean, you know, there's been people who've come before that warned us about this. I mean, you had some people like Lothrop Stoddard who wrote The Rising Tide of Color. You know, you had somewhat of a resistance which was crushed after World War II because we were suckered into that war. So, you know, it's been downhill ever since then. And now, you know, we're going to be fighting for our lives. So, I mean, this is going to be quite an uphill struggle. But with more and more people like you, man, it can absolutely happen. And you know, it's gonna be quite a century. I mean, that's for sure, because it's gonna make
regardless of how many people die of it, we can reveal that these people, these leftists, these Jews, they're looking to annihilate our people. So why would they be concerned about how many of our people die? And you know, the Jews, they don't give a damn about anyone but themselves. But we can at least show, regardless of how many end up dying from it, we can show that these people care more about their policies, these anti-white policies, these genocidal policies, than they do, you know, people dying of this disease. That they would rather, you know, that they're not going to scale back at all. And they're just going to appear absolutely bizarre to our people. They're just, you know, I hope that it will, you know, have some progress. I mean, you know,
well, it's
reminiscent,
you know, when the AIDS, when HIV came out, or AIDS, you know, there was a bit of a backlash to against homosexuality and interracial mixing, because, you know, it's just a fact that that you know, blacks have it more. It's, I mean, the numbers are heavily skewed towards homosexual and minorities, but I mean, it's again something that is maybe a check by nature to balance things out, you know. So I don't know. It's something that's interesting, but I don't really want to dwell on it. You know, I think we've got even bigger problems than Ebola, but you know, ultimately, I just wonder, like, you know, is it really a stupid strategy, even though we know the system is never going to allow us to have a voice, by people fighting like you out there, you know, and to be heard? I mean, finally, people, something might click in their head, and they'll just realize that, you know, this is not what we were told or what we were taught to believe that this country is. And, you know, eventually people will lose faith in the system, and then they'll start listening to you, you know, and people like us. So, I mean, and this timetable, I want to know, like, how much time do you have left to maybe, through antics or whatever, to get your voice out there before the actual election? When is the election?
Well, it's November 4th, and, you know, I still have some plans. Like I said, I'm doing this mailing, that I'm going to be mailing. Actually, there was a 4-on-1 gang rape. The thing took place back in May. They just arrested 4 blacks in connection to this. The victim, a 16-year-old, is a white girl. And I'm going to be mailing some of my campaign literature, including one flyer that's directed toward this incident itself, specifically in a mailing. Now, this is going to come, you know, again, this is something that's going to go in the mail, to where, you know, the media is not going to be able to stop me. I mean, you want to talk about another thing that they did. The Inquirer here, the local paper, offered a 500-page or 500-word column that all candidates for office could, you know, submit to the paper and have appear in, I believe it was the October 26th edition. And I wrote out a column there, and that was denied as well. And nothing in their, you know, the post that they had made, or I guess it was an article, but it was a thing on their internet site. Nothing in there said anything about write-in candidates or whatever. You know, there's one thing, Dana, that I wanted to do, and honest to God, I still want to do it. It really kind of, I've talked with a couple of people, and they've advised me against it. It's really not in my nature to hold off, but I guess I am, because, I mean, I guess in a way this could kind of reflect negatively if things didn't go right. But I'm really just, you know, wanting to just, in just an overwhelming way, come back and just absolutely just, you know, smack these people with the reality that I am not going to be silenced. You're not going, you know, that, you know, if you want to start this kind of behind the scenes crap, getting my radio shows pulled, then, you know, you're going to bring upon things that probably wouldn't have happened had you just let me go with my shows. I want to do, like, you know, I mean, just today I was, there's, when you go through Cincinnati, there's this, you go through the center of the city, there's like a 4-lane, you know, 71, 75 meet, and, or actually split off at that point. And I was above one of the overpasses there, a pedestrian, you know, sidewalk with the signs. So, I mean, mm-hmm. You're talking about, you know, hundreds of people every, you know, 10 minutes or so. I mean, it's just a huge thing, but I want to do something even bigger than that. And what I would really love to see, and to get, you know, to really just, as Rockwell said, spit in the eye of these Jews, is to have like 8, 10, 12, 15 people walk around me lunchtime downtown, either Lexington, Louisville, or Cincinnati. Yeah, which, you know, Cincinnati, downtown Cincinnati is right across from Covington. Anybody who says that's not, you know, Kentucky, I'm running for Kentucky, but it's right across from, you know, the river from Covington, Kentucky, and you know, it's pretty much Kentucky, Northern Kentucky. Northern Kentucky and Cincinnati is basically one and the same. And to have, during the lunch hour. I haven't made announcement of this because I'm probably not going to do it now because I have people telling me that it could look, it could reflect badly, things could go wrong. But have that many people walk around. I have a couple security guys with me and basically lead these guys and make an overwhelming statement that you failed to silence this campaign. And how many more people on and that kind of thing, how many hundreds of people, how much a shock and awe kind of thing would that be? Now, the problem is, how do we get those kind of numbers? How am I able to get those kind of numbers? I mean, it's like pulling teeth trying to get people to help with public
right.
stuff. I mean, I've gotten so much support, which I appreciate, but still, you know, it, a lot of times it's just, now, I did have an incident, actually, at NKU. I showed up at NKU, and I actually had a student there who I've kept contact with. I haven't been able to meet back up with yet. We have enough time, or you said you wanted to have some callers, so I don't want to go into that, but I actually had a student at a college, NKU, when I spoke up to take advantage of their free speech area. This was about 3 weeks ago. I posted an update online, and he actually came and stood side as by side, by my side, and went at it with these other students. So,
nice.
So, every once in a while, you know, I don't know if he'd be willing to help or with something like this, but the only thing that I could think of, and that, you know, previous to, I had actually thought about this and actually had discussions with a guy. I was downtown doing the whole thing that I did today with the signs, and I was downtown and had spoke to this homeless guy. He was a homeless veteran, and he wasn't like, if I could find 12 to 15 of this guys, I would defy what I've been advised by some people who I think highly of and who have told me that, you know, things could go wrong and it could end up, you know, looking badly upon me. But if I could find, you know, 12 to 15 of this guy, I mean, this guy was a nice, you know, pretty well-kept guy for someone in his position. And I asked him, I said, you know, would you be willing to hold a sign for me, you know, join me or whatever? And he said, yeah, sure. And I showed him the sign. He was fine with it. And this is the thing. I mean, I have to find, if I were to pursue this, I have to find people with nothing to lose. I have to find people who are available, you know? So I can't, you know, because no one else will help me. So, it's not exactly ideal to try to find, you know, essentially what I was thinking about doing, which was trying to find 8 to 10 to 12 homeless guys, you know, and what I was thinking about doing was having, you know, like buying, like, you're laughing at me, buying, like, black T-shirts, and, like, have it at least be uniform in that way to, like, and then I was even thinking about maybe buying some sunglasses for them in case, you know, some of their eyes weren't as good as they might have been at, you know, at a better time in their life, and try to get by with it. But to have that sight walking around, can you imagine how shocking that would be to the Jews? But, I mean, obviously, ideally, I'd like to have, you know, these professional guys. See, that's the thing. That's what I can't stand about some of our people is that they are so like, well, you got to get out the right, you got to present the right, you got to present the right image. Well, the fact is that, you know, as much as they talk badly about these, you know, these guys, you know, like the KKK guys or the, you know, the guys that wear the uniforms or the skin.
Right. I have respect for it. I know where you're going and I agree.
Well,
I do have a respect because at least they're willing to get out there. They're willing to stand on the street, you know.
They complain about their image and them setting a bad image for our movement, but at the same time, they don't get in there and show the right image because they never get off the damn internet or they never get out, you know, and actually do anything in public. So, you know, if you want to make a good, better image for white nationalism, you need to go out there and make it. And if you're not going to, you need to shut up about the people. I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying you, just anybody that does
this kind of
stuff, you know, that that is actually out there doing something. Because, you know, doing something is a hell of a lot better than doing nothing.
Well, that's why
what do you think of that idea, Dana? I mean,
I don't think
you have
anything
to
lose, to be honest with you. I really don't think you should worry about,
I could pull it off, dude. I know I could. And
I don't think you should worry about
potential
backlash. I mean, you already have a campaign slogan that says, we choose, we lose. You know, at this point...
The thing is, it could look. I must say, it could look badly on us if I'm using like homeless people. You know, it could look badly. And I even had one person tell me that. I had one guy tell me that. you know, what does it say about my campaign if you know, if I have to get homeless people and pay them? You know, I talked to this guy, and but there's another aspect of this that I think is really cool, too, that isn't even – most people wouldn't even notice because it's the signs and just the side of this that would have people's attention. But, you know what I'd say? If the media showed up and asked me that question, I'd say, you know what? The Jews in this country ruin anyone, try to ruin anyone, their lives, you know, if they stand up against the Jews. So I have to find people with very little to lose. That doesn't mean there's not other people standing with me, and I think that there'd be a ton of people that would be just absolutely blown away and just happy as hell to see that. I really do.
Well, even their non-white pets, you know, that they use against us, when one of them starts to, you know, like a Farrakhan or Cynthia McKinney or, you know, who knows. I mean, when one of them starts to expose what's really going on, you know, they come down on them too. So, I mean, there's ways where you could really rattle. I'm not saying go out there and get minorities. I mean, I'm just saying it's.
Oh no, I wouldn't do that. I mean,
there are things you can bring up to show that look. It's not only. I mean, you're a white nationalist. You're very honest about it, and I liked you know, how you dealt with that Israeli interview. And you know, you really did a good job there too. But, yeah, I mean, what I'm trying to say here is there's bigger implications for everybody when you allow a small minority to dominate and control, you know, a huge state. I mean, the fact is we know that there is it's an oligarchy as it is, a plutocracy. And when you have a tribe that is motivated by ethnic interests that conflict with not only, I mean, we're their number one problem, but it's hard to even say that we are their number one problem anymore when they have so many of our people hoodwinked and brainwashed, you know, and working for them. And I hate the fact that you can't get the amount of support on the ground that you need. But look, you're a visionary, and you're one of the first people to start coming out and getting off the net. And
well, you
look,
mentioned,
yeah.
You mentioned, Dana, what you just said was exactly right. The fact that, you know, on the list at this point, at this stage, certainly we have the potential. And they're not, you know, they wouldn't be foolish to worry about the potential. But especially with all this other stuff going on. You know, and when I'm, you know, when I'm accused of being an agent by some of these people, let me tell you something, white nationalists out there, we need to actually do something significant to justify us having, you know, sure, this stuff has happened in the past, but the fact is we sit around all the time worrying about this crap. Let me tell you something, we need to actually build a foundation and actually, you know, make some progress and do something outside of being on the internet, get the public support and get the public behind us, then we can worry about these agents. Before that happens, I'm not even worried about that crap, and anyone who sits around and is constantly immersed and engaged in calling other people agents, I mean, you really need to actually do something to actually make it to where the system is actually fearing us enough to actually do something. Now, you know, the aspect of this whole thing with the big ticket thing, and again, this is kind of inspired by, you know, George Lincoln Rockwell, who's probably my main source of inspiration right there with Dr. Pierce, because he had these kind of rallies back in the 60s, man, where he'd have these guys go out there with the picket signs and, you know, and you know, he would be there observing and joining in. He'd have a sign, too. And the thing about this, the aspect that I kind of think is cool is the fact that the leftists in this country usually, you know, mock the homeless and the downtrodden as just one of theirs and don't even do it. I mean, they figure, okay, you know, the homeless are you know, going to be behind leftist causes, behind the Democrats, or behind, you know, just the far left. For the leftists to take note, as much as there may be some out there that may make light of the fact, probably the Jews more than anything else, that, you know, if it was seen that I had homeless, and now I've announced it, so, you know, if it ever happens, they'll know. But the leftists, I think, would be serious. They'd have a serious case of, you know, they'd be butthurt big time. Because, I mean, that is us taking their you know, a main part of what they have always championed is, you know, part of their, you know, camp or whatever. And that's what we have to do, man. We can't just, like, let our people fall into the hands of these leftists and that we just say that we're going to abandon them. I mean, I think it would be cool as heck. Not only, you know, forget about paying them. I'm giving them a hand up as white men. They're helping me out with this. Heck, I'd even be willing to take all of them out for dinner afterwards, you know. I could do this. If it was 15 people, you know, it's funny. I was talking to the homeless guy. He told me that they actually make different amounts of money at different times. So depending on what time I wanted their help, it would depend on how much I'd spend. But I'm thinking I'd spend about $300 if it was 15 people. If it was less than that, it'd be less. And then, you know, maybe $100, maybe take them all out for dinner afterwards, you know, and help our people out, even though, but not only help them out, but get their help, you know, and I'm not just paying these guys to do it, you know, I'm helping out white men down on their luck, but we're not just being a charity, we're expecting some help back from it. So I think this is, you know, I have to say, I'd be depressed if I don't. I've had some, like I said, there are some pitfalls. I mean, if these guys, let's just say, you know, became like, if they were, you know, being, you know, have, I don't think the public, honestly, would really do know what to do. I mean, I've had some people tell me, a couple guys I've talked to have told me not to do it, said, you know, what if all these guys get a group of people against them and they all drop the signs and leave? I mean, and it does look bad. I mean, that would look bad. It would kind of, you know, but the way I see it is there's two classes of people downtown Cincinnati. There's the business people and blacks. And when I went out there, down there in the past with signs about Jews, the blacks have agreed with me more than the whites. So I'm not expecting the blacks to be in severe disagreement. I'm not expecting the white businessmen to start anything. Maybe they're going to heckle, maybe. But having that many people there, I mean, hell, that might intimidate them. And this whole idea of, like, these leftists, now this is why previously I hadn't said anything, but, I mean, if I don't announce a date, you know, I don't think there'd be any problem with that. But there's not a big leftist population here in Cincinnati. So I wouldn't even expect any kind of problems there, which there is some justifiable objections or at least concerns to have when you're bringing people in and trying to get the help of people who you really don't know, you know. So, you know, it's not completely unfounded to have some concerns, but it's one of these things where these Jews have, you know, sat back sneering at getting my ads pulled. You know, I've had my YouTube videos pulled. Someone put a Facebook page together. It wasn't even me, just some supporters out there, which I want to say, I don't know if I mentioned it yet, I really appreciate all the support I've gotten. I mean, I was on a radio show the other day, and actually I had someone call in and said they were honored to talk to me, man. That was just weird to hear. I don't really consider myself, anyone else would be honored to talk to. You know, I don't know. We're going to think about it, but, you know, I've given my word to someone because, you know, I have future plans, and I don't want anyone that I associate myself with in the future to be associated with kind of a disaster. I felt horrible in March when these guys in the hoods and the robes showed up, unbeknownst to me. I had no idea they were going to show up. I felt horribly about, you know, kind of giving the media, you know, things to bash the white man March with that. But, you know, I just believe we can't stop fighting. That's one thing we as white nationalists have to do. We have to know that not everything's going to work out. We're going to fail, you know, and this whole idea that any white nationalist person who stands up or someone who wants to lead, it has to be this perfect person. I mean, these people are going to be waiting forever, and they're going to see our race continue to lose, be marginalized. We're going to continue to lose our civilization. Our numbers are going to continue to drop because all these people, all they're interested in is finding this, like, perfect person to stand up. You know, the fact is, George Lincoln Rockwell, he made a lot of mistakes, or, you know, some mistakes. He wasn't perfect, but he kept on trying. He kept on coming back at them. And that's just the viewpoint I see, is that, you know, we have to always be ready to adjust to what they do, and we can't be afraid to fail. Because, you know, and I say that, but, I mean, I don't think I've really, I can say unequivocally I haven't failed with anything horribly. I mean, I've had these ads pulled, but there's good that comes out of that. You know, the media.
But I wonder if there's any legal action that could be taken, you know, against, for discrimination, you know, for because you did mention how they already tried to block you from the debates, but those radio ads, I thought, are supposed to be open to anybody that's running. So, I mean, I'm just wondering if that's you have a case there, if any lawyers would be willing to take it up, you know. But
let me take this issue. Let me take this issue for just briefly here. There is a lawyer that I had sent a letter to. Now, a local supporter here paid this guy. Now, this guy was, you know, is explained to me by the guy who paid him as someone who is quote unquote ideologically with us. Okay, and I want to make a very profound statement here, and something I truly believe, because the fact is, even though this guy supposedly is ideologically with us, he's still wanting to charge me. Now, he paid, our supporter paid a retainer. He took half of his normal hourly rate. But this whole idea that we have as white nationalists, that we're going to send these guys, and I don't think it's a bad idea, but we have to take something into consideration, and it is the power of materialism, Jewish materialism, how it corrupts, how money corrupts, and the fact that, you know, we can send these guys in, but what is going to happen to them? Are they still going to be moved more by the ideology or by the money once that money starts to come in? Because, dude, I'm telling you right now, I mean, if you're exactly right. I have a lawsuit, and I have a lawsuit I think I could win against these creeps if I found someone to take the case and take it for free. Now, that would be excluding any kind of fees. I'm not expecting them to, like, pay to file it. I'm not expecting it. Hell, I would even pay for their gas, you know, travel or whatever. But the fact is that, you know, their expertise and everything, if they're ideologically with us, should be something we shouldn't have to pay for, man. And,
right.
And it's like, now, let me make this point. I'm not trying to get his help with, okay, I've been sued because my dog bit somebody. I don't even have a dog, but I'm just using it as an example. I'm not saying that these guys should be willing to help us for free in our personal deal, but this is something that is a huge matter when it comes to our fight. They are illegally, they have flaunted the law. I mean, there is no doubt about it. In my estimation, what they've done, they are basically counting on the fact that I'm not going to be able to sue. At the same time, they may have went up and down the line of the SEC to every court they would encounter, or have a chance to encounter, and see if they've got the thumbs up from them that they're going to be making decisions that are on their side. I don't know. But all I know is that as a remedy for violating a candidate's rights and not selling them time, I can actually file for their operator's license, that I can actually go and file because they did not adhere to the reasonable access law. And since I have sent notification to Clear Channel's headquarters in San Antonio, in theory, I can actually now, because they haven't taken measures to correct the illegal actions of one of their stations here in Cincinnati, now that I've went to their corporate, and they haven't done anything, and I've been advised of this by someone who has been running these ads for a long time and who had his own ads pulled in 2002, but then got them reinstated after going through a letter, and I don't know if he had a lawyer actually go through to him, but he actually got his ads put back on after they illegally pulled them, and he told me that you can actually file for all of their licenses, some 155 some stations. Clear Channel is a huge media conglomerate. You know, if I could find a lawyer to do this for free, man, we have a case. Now, you can't ever underestimate the ability of the Jews to manipulate this court system that they control. But given the right breaks, given the right judge, given the right day, I mean, you know, who knows what could happen. But, you know, the fact is, you know, like I said, as far as this whole grand plan to get these people in positions, that's great in theory, but are we going to have them at our assistance and at the, you know, basically at the movement's disposal when they get there, after they've got, you know, after they've amassed something to lose, you know, are they still going to be there? Because I'm personally offended at the idea that this guy, which I've only talked to him once, and he seems like a decent guy. From every account I've heard, the lawyer truly is, you know, a racialist. But I just have a big problem with this guy having charged me. Now, again, I've got it all through a local supporter who insisted that, you know, I'm going to pay this. We need to take action on this. But I mean, it would take like $4,000, I've been told, to go on a file for a breach of contract.
Right.
You know, it's just, I mean, it's just so much money. And I mean, I want to, dude, I want to sue. I mean, not only them. I mean, I want to go after the airport here who illegally denied me access. Hell, I was even wanting to see what the legalities would be of the Inquirer newspaper denying me the column when they never said any kind of qualifying measures. I mean, you know, I think it's important that we stand up for our rights. But, I mean, in this system, you know, you got to – it's sick how they have their laws, but to get their laws enforced, you got to go to court when these people won't adhere to these laws. And it's just more than anything, let me just say this, Dana, all this resistance that I've been getting, everything – the Jews are what they are. We know what they are. We know what they're about. We know they're going to be dead set against us. I think the major frustration is we can't, and again, we have to get over this frustration. We can't just sit and be frustrated, but how our people can't see, you know, and if people don't believe the Jews control anything, my advice, just like Rockwell's advice back in the 60s was, you know, if you don't believe the Jews control anything, just try criticizing them. Just try, you know, standing against them, and you'll see. You know, that this idea of the law and the Constitution and of democracy, it is a complete and utter fraud when it comes to actually challenging the people who manipulate everything and who, yeah, allow people to act as if they're free. They act as if, you know, this is a freedom of choice and that this, you know, greatest government, greatest, you know, system there is. You know, it is just another Jewish construct that they have completely manipulated and control lock, stock, and barrel. And if you think you're going to take this country back from these people through, you know, being nice by not mentioning their names, by thinking we can sneak it by them somehow,
right?
You know, we have to. There's no other way to take it the head on. And I don't consider myself an extremist. I guess saying truth in this age is, but I mean. It is absolutely undeniable, the amount of power and control and just the way in which they just will arbitrarily just ignore laws when it works against them. But yet the conservatives in this country and patriotic people want to, like, think that, you know, this Constitution is going to protect them. It's like, you know, I don't know, man. They just ignore it.
Yeah, I mean, it's if there's one thing that this all illustrates is that, you know, one positive thing is that the way that they're trying to suppress it and ignore it kind of shows that they've lost confidence in the idea that if these messages and ideas get out, that the people are going to receive them and laugh at it and say, oh, he's a nutcase, you know, he's a neo-Nazi, he's this, he's that. You know, they must be worrying that, you know, if it gets out, the people might just agree with it, you know, and this is why, you know, they have to just shut it down. So, you know, with the internet and with everything else, I mean, this is one thing we have going for us is if you can demonstrate that, you know, you are being denied, you know, your shot at the free market of ideas, quote unquote. You know, then it just exposes the system as a fraud, and it gives more credibility to our argument of who is really pulling the strings. So, I mean, there's I don't really see anything bad coming out of it. I mean, I don't really care how you do at the polls or whatever. I think, yeah.
And that's the thing, dude. I've prepared for even that, and I don't want to get, you know, too much into it, but, I mean, as far as, like, see, and it's just the thing is, it's not going to infuriate me when it comes to responding to these people because you've got to keep your composure. I think that's the thing that I just keep on, and I've been able to do. I did it the entire time on in Louisville. I'm just somebody, me personally. You never want to let this enemy be inclined to think they're getting to you. You know, and you want to be the one with the edge. At least that's the way that I try to go about things. And, you know, you never want to let on that their work is frustrating you. I mean, you know, look at what happened with this guy. They actually had a guy here. This is what I just call kind of a pile-on story. There was some guy that was owns a business in Blue Ash, which is a highly a lot of Jews live in this suburb of Cincinnati. It's called Blue Ash. And he responded to my campaign after he heard about the signs and heard about my campaign by giving away free bagels at his bagel shop or something. This guy, you know, it's funny. It's online. It's funny as hell, Dana. There's a guy on Stormfront that actually went on to and found this guy's business reviews. He's known as the Bagel Man here. He's some guy. His last name's Mark, so I don't know. But there was a story here that, you know, the guy who unearthed his reviews, there was a bunch of people that had went on there that had went online and reviewed his shop, said it was dirty, filthy, all this stuff. And, you know, this guy should probably be more concerned about, you know, not having a filthy establishment rather than, you know, complaining about my signs. But anyway, I had actually contacted, talking about that column, the reporter that did that story, because she was the one that was actually the contact through this whole column thing that the Inquirer was offering. And I had made mention of the article. I said, you know, and she ended up quoting this in an updated version of the article. I said that she wanted to know if she could print this that I'd said about her article that she wrote with the guy with the bagels. And I said, you know, it was quite humorous to me that someone would be so inclined to stand against the truth that they would give away food like that. That wasn't an exact quote, but it was. But anyway, another publication interviewed this guy afterwards, and it said that that was something that infuriated him even more, because he got interviewed on the topic of me making the statement in response to his little stunt there or whatever. So, and it said he was infuriated. So this is the kind of thing. I mean, we're so inclined usually with these leftists or Jews to, like, you know, we're out in public a few times. You know, so many of our people go out and just scream at them, yell at them, and, you know, engage them in angry kind of dialogue. With me, yeah. I like to basically come at them in a way where it's kind of a jovial way. I kind of make fun of them being angry about me making these, you know, this stand, you know, violating their social, you know, their dogmas and sacred beliefs.
You
want to
make them lose control. You want to make them
exactly,
get
angry. Exactly, man.
No, I mean,
put them
the
on their heels.
You know, and I've noticed that in the media, especially, you know, it seems like there are some Jews that just for sensationalist value, because they realize how much power that they have, will get a little bit of a hard on just with the idea that somebody's out there trying to challenge them. You know, for instance, I mean, well, even Glenn Miller got on. What was it, Howard Stern? You know, I could see maybe Vice interviewing you, possibly. You know, so I don't know. A friend of mine just told me
there was I don't know. There's an online site called The Daily Beast.
Yeah,
and they did a story on me, and she's a Jewess. Now I'm sure she's a Jewess now. I'm pretty certain before I even came out and said she was a Jewess, and I don't do that when I'm not sure. But I think if she wasn't a Jewess, I know if she wasn't a Jewess, she would have said it in her article to belittle me for saying she was Jewish when she wasn't. Her name was Olivia Nazi. She wrote an article on my campaign. She sent me an email and
Nazi?
Asked me one question.
Nazi?
Yeah. She sent me an email and asked me one question. She said it was not. It was Nozzi. I think it is.
Oh, okay.
She sent me a question. She asked me this typical belittling question, saying, asking if I'd ever been diagnosed with a mental illness. Now, the response that I gave was actually one at this time. This was the week that the big media thing went on, and I was busy getting back with other people and people who mattered. And supporters and people had offered radio shows, and then just as regular supportive people trying to get back with all of them. And I actually put it on VNN, and I said, you know, anyone got a good response to get back to this woman? Give me about an hour or two, and I'll pick out the best one. And I got one.
I would
have
said, hasn't everybody?
Well, I got back with her, and I said, I'd be glad to tell you whether or not I've had one, but first tell me who took the hook out of your schnoz. And if you look at this, I mean, the thing is, this girl looks like she's had, like, a ton of plastic surgery. You can still see the Jewishness in her face, all the money that's taken to you know, somewhat transform her, still hasn't done the job. I could imagine that this little rat, this Kikas, she probably gets, you know. And yet, I still have people online that said that was, like, the wrong way to come at it, and that I should have, you know, been more, you know, tried to, it's like, why should, you know, this person is not showing any amount of giving a damn about the facts, and they're showing me no respect, so I'm not going
to
show them any respect. And we need
right,
to start having
that. You,
we need to stop trying to debate these
sure.
Jews and leftists. I'm so sick and tired of people trying to act as if these people care about the truth or care about our principles or care about whether there's an accurate portrayal. Now, if there's someone who's seriously open to the truth, then certainly I'm going to engage them. But, man, we need to just take it, have the same kind of, disgust and disdain for them. And she actually printed that in her article. She printed that response in her article, dude, as what I said. So, I mean, you know, I was going to continue on with something I'd said before. But
well, wait, I wanted to ask you, are you running as an independent or like just, you're not attached to any political party like American Freedom Party or anything like that, right?
No, just on my own right now.
Just your own, yeah, just as an, okay. Because, you know,
there
was
a guy from the American Freedom, the American Freedom Party or whatever that was supposed to run. He actually contacted me. I haven't got a chance to get back with him. And he was supposed to run, but I guess he got his paperwork. He told me he got his paperwork in late or something. And
yeah, that's,
you know, unfortunately wasn't able
that's
to run.
Angelo Gage. He was going to run
in
New Jersey. Yeah, I'm probably going to have him on the show at some point soon, too. But, yeah, you know what? I think, look, we're firing our opening volleys, you know, opening shots. Just look at it that way. I mean, George Lincoln Rockwell, we had all these people in the past, and now it's time to do something. And we shouldn't look at it as, we can't win, you know, it's a joke. We got to look at it as how can we manipulate the system against itself? How can we...
It's not just that.
You know, how can we,
perhaps,
look at the climate right now with people against war and against, you know, just all this neocon agenda, which is totally Jewish. I mean, like, it's so easy to really get people fired up, especially when they realize, when it starts to hit home. I just feel like Americans haven't suffered yet, especially white Americans. We're losing, our whole world is being taken, you know, ripped from underneath us, but, you know, we're just giving it away, too, at the same time without a fight. And then when someone like you comes along, you know, even within the movement that supposedly supports you, you get so much antagonism and criticism. So,
well,
I mean,
I've only had a few people.
Yeah,
I've only had a few people. You know, I've gotten so much support, which I appreciate. I really just, I'm happy too. I'm happy people are you know, I've been doing things for a long time and gotten, you know, minimal support and minimal you know, encouragement. And you have to be self motivated a lot of times to do this because, you know, the encouragement's going to be few and far between. But I really appreciate it. You know, but. The thing is, not only, and this is just my personal view, I mean, this might not be a view of you or a lot of people, but, I mean, as far as, like, opening volleys, I mean, a part of it, too, is that we can start to kind of display to our people that perhaps the United States of America is something that is never going to be a country that represents our interests, and we need to start thinking outside the box, And you know, there's people online that think they can go online and, you know, sign these petitions for this or that or secession or whatever, you know. But that if we can display to our people that, man, this system is completely rigged against us, completely fixed, if we can demonstrate it, not just talk about it, we have to demonstrate it. We can't just be cynical and just say this stuff and have people, you know, but if they can see us, see one guy or hopefully more than just one guy stand up and with all his heart and soul fight and try to do it the right way and try to do it through their system and get all this crap, you know, and all this, you know, just roadblock after roadblock and not applying the system to us and not giving us a fair shake, then I think it makes them more receptive to the idea that, you know, I personally believe that you know, the United States of America does not hold the fate of the white race in its hands. I mean, we can be, you know, at some point, if we get enough support behind the idea, if we show our people that this system's corrupt and that, you know, we have a foundation that we can set for a white homeland, that we can release ourselves from the dishonorable and anti-white government of the United States of America. And that is, you know, we shouldn't be locked into this idea that you know, our racist fate rests with the United States of America. I mean, you know, that may well be just a death sentence for us.
Oh, absolutely. I think more and more people are coming to that very conclusion. If not, because you know everybody's aware of the hostile atmosphere of political correctness, not only in the Jewish media and in academia, and the total control they have just over people's thoughts. I mean, it's not only hate crimes; it's thought crimes. It's the total Orwellian system we live under. But when you show that, it's the judicial system, it's the laws, it's anything where you think there's going to be some, modicum of objectivity, and then, if it comes to somebody who's standing against the grain, it's going to go the other way. I mean, forget about it. I mean, maybe people will just lose faith. We need to get them to lose faith, and I think really half the battle rests in drawing the left and racializing them, and then taking conservatives who are implicit racialists and getting them to lose faith and get angry and radicalized and stop being constitutionalists and stop being, NRA fans. And I'm all for guns. I'm just saying, like it's these pathways where they have confined our people, that are completely useless to racial struggle. It just, they put us in these boxes where, it's all fluff, and they divide us. And I mean, that's what it's going to be. We're going to need conservatives who are already, they have the right idea. They just believe in the system. They believe that we can, through free debate and exchange of ideas and all the, all this nonsense, that we can actually turn the tide. I mean, it's so far gone. And the left is so, the hegemony, the domination is total. So, what you're doing is you're throwing the target out there. You're telling people, who really is creating, all of these different symptoms that they hate so much. Gay marriage and all these things. I mean, Arizona, I guess, just legalized it now. It's like that's all such a waste of time. Until if we had all these people doing what you're doing, I think things would start to roll, and you would start to see white people in the streets. And it's coming. I mean, because they're going to be forced to eventually. We need more. We need to suffer more. Unfortunately, I really feel that's what it's going to take. But
well, you said it. You said it, Dana. You said that people need to lose faith, and then you said they need to get angry. And what I maintain is that the people need to be urged to hate this system. And this system hates our people, so we have every right to hate it back. And right now what we have is a population that's very cynical, very negative when it comes to our political system, but at the same time they still tolerate a system where we have the so-called punishment for treason is that they lose an election, and then what do they get to do? Then they get to go around and make speeches at colleges for $25,000 a year. They get to become part of some kind of some kind of think tank, or they're on TV, they get to go on Fox News or MSNBC. That is not the right punishment for treason, for what they have done to this country. And it's because our population have not, they need to hate these people. They need to be brought to just almost dehumanize these creeps that have served the Jews, these people that, I was on a show last night. I was talking about the fact that, it is absolutely unacceptable, and what do we hear from the anti-whites, and what do we hear from these Jews and apologists for the anti-white establishment? Oh, there's plenty of whites in positions of power. Well, yeah, but there's absolutely none of them, unlike the Jews, and unlike the blacks, and unlike the representatives from the Mexicans, the mestizos, Hispanics, none of them advocate for our interests. Of them are against our interests, and we have these numbers come out about our declining demographics, and nothing gets done. Absolutely nothing is said. It's just something to be observed. We have to get our people inclined to believe that these numbers are declining, and damn it, we need to do something about it. It's something not to just sit and watch happen, and just these politicians need to say, we need to take measures that's going to stop this problem. And as far as these conservatives go, we have got to radicalize them to the point where they realize that as long as they continue to react to the leftists, when they react to them and they're so concerned about being called names, when they show that concern, the leftists has won. Even when they try to come out and put their viewpoint out there and say before it, though, oh, well, I'm not racist, or I've got black friends, or they try now. Don't you love when they put their black conservatives like that Carson up there, they want them to do their work for them? It is our racist fate that is at stake, and we have to do our job. These conservatives that want to put these blacks up there to say the stuff that they should be saying, or white men with guts should be saying, advocating for our race, advocating for our culture, our principles, our history. This is what it's our job. It's not the job of these little talking-headed blacks that they put on Fox News or whatever. So, it's essential, though, and I think that we have an opportunity. I truly believe we have an opportunity to really bring some of these disaffected conservatives, and there's going to be more and more of them, into our camp, because they're going to be sold out more and more by these white Republicans who are going to try to appeal and fail to appeal to these non-whites. And these Republicans, they've got to realize this is something they're going to learn a hard lesson about, because even though they may profess that race doesn't matter, they may profess that,
we're all individuals. We're all just, that's the biggest thing the Jews have really done, is turned us from race to individuals. I mean, now we're working against all these ethnic and racial groups, and we're fighting as lone, every man for himself individuals. I mean, that's another huge thing they've done to us, is to get us not to think racially, to think, and it's just insane. I mean, it's obviously ridiculous, but, and that's why
it's
really hate the Ayn Rand and the libertarian trap and all that stuff. So, I mean, we've got...
It's insane. It's insane when the other groups do vote their racial group. Jews vote Jews. Blacks vote black. Hispanics vote Hispanic. And these Republicans think that they're going to put up people like Marco Rubio and Ted Cruz, who have been raised with a silver spoon in a white environment, who are not going to appeal at all to the millions of swarthy, dirty Mexicans that have come here, jumping the border, and the ones that vote for Villaraigosa, they will vote for a white traitor who is going to give them all the handouts and hand-ups that white traitors have for decades in our government before they vote for these Republicans are not, they don't get it. And they will learn that as much as they want to deny race, as much as they want to, not make it a racial thing, it is a racial thing. This is a racial fight. You're not going to make it any different just because you want it to be different. It is reality. What it is a racial fight. It's a war for racial survival. It is all about ethnic identity. It always has been a war against it has always been about ethnic identity. And just because we have been lulled in this idea that it doesn't matter doesn't mean that the rules are going to change. It doesn't mean that reality is going to change. And we better – and again, we have an opportunity. Instead of being negative toward these white conservatives, many of them are going to be receptive. They're going to start waking up. So we have to remain positive. We have to approach these people and not belittle them for their stupidity of the past. And we have to remain positive. And it is tough to do. It's tough. I'm not saying, there might be a lot of people saying, well, how can you have hope in these people? How can you, it's like, dude, I can't stand their sheepishness, the way they've been so befuddled and fooled. But, man, if you're a serious racialist, if you believe in winning this damn thing, rather than just being a pessimist and complaining about everything, we've got to, as much as our movement as a whole kind of just has this idea of just like we're in this kind of like, together, and the masses are against us, and they're stupid, and sure they are, in a lot of the things how they react and whatnot. But we can't have the Jews have us so pessimistic, and even in some cases with some people hate our own people for how stupid they've been made and how they went along. Yeah.
Well, I don't know. I'm a little divided on that, because on the one hand, I want to forgive them. I want to give them a second chance to redeem themselves. But when again and again that they, you know, they show that how suicidal they are, you know, it's for the ones that will cross over. Yeah, it's got open arms. I mean, but you know, the Republicans. I mean, that's what's so great about you running against Mitch McConnell. And I hope you get a chance to go to one of his speaking events or one of his rallies and just walk in there, you know, with your entourage or whatever and cause a stir, because I mean that's just great that that's who you're running against.
I'm going to try and get a group of people together. He's going to be speaking to a few days actually before the election, and I know of this event already, so I'm going to try to get a few people together to be outside the event. You know, you got to pay to get in these things. I mean, these places where he speaks, you got to pay. I think it's like a Chamber of Commerce event that they're having here. You got to pay like $100. I'm not paying anything that's going to go to him or these other race traders or whatever. We could be outside and certainly make ourselves known. And I was down there. I mean, and the thing you got to remember, I'm talking about the decent white population, people that, you know, that they're some of them may be too busy trying to make ends meet for their families to be engaged in what we're engaged in and thinking about what we're engaged. But their spirit of what we're concerned about, they're concerned about as well. And, you know, the fact is we should never let ourselves get dismayed at being numerically outnumbered, especially when we look at so many of the people that stand against us. I always ask people, it's like, would you want some of these people that stand against us on our side anyway? As much as we, like, complain about, say, like, people like Mark Potok, for example, the SPLC, that's you. You know,
right.
He talks bad about it. Would you want that guy? I mean, I every time that guy appears on CNN or whatever, I'm happy as hell, because I don't see how any white person with a shred of racial identity in their being is not going to be turned off by that, you know, queer Jew, just the nasally, abrasive voice and anti-American, everything he says. I mean, I would hate, I would be terrified to have him on our side. You know, so, you know, that's the thing. I mean, yeah, I mean, as Dr. Pierce said, man, I mean, just because, you know, we're numerically outnumbered does not mean that we can't whip these people in a minute, you know, when the time comes. And the fact is that we should never fall, as he also said, for the defeatist lie that we can't undo this, and that everything has happened precisely because we haven't reacted. And we have, you know, and the fact is, yeah, it's taken 50 to 60 years. Never think that it's going to take that long to take it back. Now, as far as having a revival and a renaissance of our people, that's going to take time. But as far as building a vehicle against them and being able to really become engaged and give them a real opponent for once, unlike these kosher conservative Republicans, you know, is going to be something where we work in truth. We work in the spirit of truth, and they've had to deceive and lie and manipulate. It's taken them that long. I mean, when we go up and stand directly against them, pulling no punches, when we, we're going to make progress a lot quicker than they have to, because we work and stand for truth. We stand for our people. You know, they've had to fool our people, and they've had to continually lull them to sleep. It's taken a lot of time. Never get discouraged that, you know, what might be mounting odds. You have to remember, always remember, the Jews have always been risen up against. It's something that is a historical guarantee, folks. We are going to see another revolt against this rotten people, and the only thing that is in question is, are we going to see a final end to the plague against humanity that they are? Are we going to call for a final solution to the Jewish problem, whatever that may be? But there is no doubt they will be risen up again. So you know, take heart in that.
Oh, absolutely, and we know it was just 50 years ago, or 7 years ago now, where, you know, you had a movement that nearly whipped them out of total power. I mean, like, and that's why, say what you will about National Socialism, I still feel that everything that they laid out with, you know, I take exception to maybe the German chauvinism as opposed to Pan-Aryan racialism, But it was still, you know, everything has already been laid out there, in my opinion. I mean, I really do feel like that's the direction we need to go in. You know, and we can't do it right now in America, but it doesn't mean that it's not going to be reborn in another way, because it's the same archetypes, the same general principles, and everything that they sought to do, whether it was crushing capitalism and, you know, just creating a better system for everybody, you know, and just uplifting their people, uniting their people, and giving Germany back to the Germans. That's what we need here. We need somebody to give America back to the Americans. You know, the problem is it's just we're living behind enemy lines. It hasn't been the country that our parents and our grandparents grew up in. And as time goes on, and unless things get much worse to the point where we have a backlash out of necessity, we can't count on, you know, the youth who don't even remember what it was like to live in a white America. You know, they've already been raised with the idea that, you know, this is just, we're all just people, you know, we're all just Americans, and this is a nation of liberty. It's not a nation of race or blood and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that's all got to go. It's all got to be completely thrown out the window, and we're going to have to start anew, and we're going to need somewhat of a collapse in order to do that. That's why I think a lot of people just, instead of doing what you're doing and getting their feet wet, they just say, I'm just going to wait until we have a chance, because we need a reshuffling of the deck. But until that happens, there's a lot of things we can be doing, and if we all did what you're doing, maybe we don't have to wait for a collapse. You know, I mean, that's why, like, I think ultimately I'm a pessimist in the short term, but in the long term, you know, I it's people like you that do give me hope, so.
Well, Dana, I mean, you got it exactly right, and I mean, certainly things are going to get worse, but we have to build a foundation. I mean, I was thinking the other day about, you know, as a former member of the National Alliance, and how I believe there is a potential with this Ebola thing to be able to really just have tens of thousands, if not more, people just really just turn receptive, if not right with us, on everything we stand for and have been saying, because we've been telling the truth. We've been saying what's going to happen as a result of this immigration system and this, you know, white population replacement and this, you know, throwing open our borders to the third world. But there's no foundation there. And something that people have to realize is that, yes, things have to get worse, and you know, but we have to establish a foundation and be able to show ourselves worthy of the support of people who have become disaffected and who are looking for another option, because they will never step off a sinking ship until they see something that they can actually trust is going to be seaworthy. And almost no matter how bad things get, if we can't establish with the public that, first of all, we're professional, that we can actually, we have the people in place that can actually run a nation, or we can, you know, do more than just complain about something, that we, you know, that's why Dr. Pierce's way of, you know, building that leadership cadre and having people in place that can really, you know, be people who can set things up and can establish a working order. I mean, you know, they're never going to just join us because we are preaching against this rotten system, or we are, you know, telling the truth. They're never going to do that. And you know, it reminds me of this cartoon. I've brought this up a couple different shows. What used to be in the National Alliance, some of the material they sent the prospective members, a little cartoon. And it was a four-part cartoon, and it had, you know, two podiums and two people behind the podium. And one of them was – you know what I'm talking about? Well,
yep.
would you like me to explain it to the audience here?
Yeah, go ahead.
Well, it had the system guy, and then it had the, you know, the nationalist. And, you know, during the course of the cartoon, at the very beginning, the The nationalist podium is very small, and there's hardly anyone in front of it. And the system's podium is a lot bigger and taller, and everyone's in front of it. But during the course of the cartoon, that system's the podium starts to crack, and the other podium, the nationalist podium, starts to grow. And there's other people that are coming over there, and there's people from that are still on the side of the system that are looking over to the nationalist podium. And the third and the fourth part of the cartoon, I think at the third part, or is it the fourth part, where the cis guy behind the podium, the cartoon shows him yelling at the other side to come back over because they're all going to the nationalist side. So that's what has to happen. I mean, we can't just sit back and count on the system. Because we know the system's going to decline, and we know that it's going to disaffect more of our people. It's going to make them more skeptical of this system being able to give them a chance of prosperity. But they are never going to come to our side just because we are, saying, hey, we told you so, or, we're telling the truth, or, we've been saying this for years, or this is the better way. We have to show them. And, even though, I'm not going to win this election, but I am at least engaging. And more people know me, more regular white people. And folks, we have to have these masses to win. I mean, you can be in this little kind of cultish club thing if you want to be in this just to be kind of a cynic and just be around, it's good to be around people who, share your ideals. But I'm in this for one thing, and that's power, to win. And it is to overcome our enemies, to defeat them. And we are in a battle against them for our masses, for our people. And we have to get our people back. I mean, that's what we have to do. And if we're going to do that, then we have to be serious and actually engage them in a way that we have to know that, and it's not just a bunch of idiots that get on the internet and don't look for us. It's the people who care who look for us, who go to nationalist sites or whatever. There's plenty of people, though, who believe in what we believe. But they're not going to be, most of them aren't going to seek the truth out. They will, at the same time, support someone who is supporting things that are going to be things that they're concerned about or things that they're noticing. If you say things that they've been thinking, they're going to support us. And we have to see the internet is so important as a tool. It's a very tool. We can't win without it, but we can't win by just resting on it and the power that it has. We have to, start to incorporate it into other forms of activism. And I think in many ways the internet, and you can draw a direct correlation between the internet coming upon and the end of the effort of our people to, be in the public eye. I mean, and some of it has had to do with people getting older, but it seems like as many young people, man, we have so many young people that are, that have found the truth and are engaged on the internet, but, it's just, and at the end of the day, we have to also realize that there's risk involved and we have to take risk. And I think that's one of the things that have kind of had people who have been the few, and it haven't been many. It's one notable guy, this Ramsey guy, that has them maybe puzzled at why I'm doing what I'm doing.
You talking about Ramsey Paul?
Yeah. Well, maybe the reason that this guy goes on the internet and he said it like multiple times. He says, he could be an agent, but then takes it back. I mean, that was the most reprehensible. That's the thing that pissed me off the most. So either I am or I'm not. Either you're going to say I am and stick with it, or not, or shut the hell up. But for this floated out there and then he immediately take it back this is the move of a pansy. The fact is I could understand people having the opinion, hey, man, this guy's doing this. How is he ever gonna be in normal society, or how is the fact is, folks, I mean, I have made the decision, I made it a long time ago, that I'm not interested in making $150,000 a year and sitting around acting like all this stuff's not going on. I'm in this full bore. I've made the decision to not look back. And, maybe that's something that other people can't can't ever see themselves doing. You know, maybe that's something that they're never going to be able to do, but we have to, honestly, we're going to have to take that risk. Now, I'm not saying that, you know, everyone should run for Senate. That's not what I'm saying everyone should do. Everyone should take their own personal circumstances and evaluate things. But I think that for our movement to grow, that we have to have people who are who share our ideology constantly reevaluate how we can be active and how we can start to take a more active role. And is one activity that you might be able to do on a local level going to be something that's seriously going to affect you? You know, can we participate more and still be able to keep our jobs or still be able to, you know, basically come out of it, you know, unscathed? You know, I think that's essential, because I think a lot of the time what our people do is just over-dramatize the idea of just ruin coming upon them for doing just the simplest of actions. I mean, I can't get people to come out sometimes and help me just because they're afraid. I mean, how many times do I go out and I just stand like I did today and there's no media that shows up, there's no one with a picture, no one, you know, no one's the wiser. You know, but I could have four or five people up there instead of just being me, and it could really, you know, the people driving by could really, you know, be more of a statement being made. So,
yeah, well,
you know,
hey,
but I
don't know if you heard this, but I wanted to say, in light of the whole freaking the Jew who owns that team, and he had that issue with his girlfriend who was like half black. Yeah, Sterling. Yeah. Well, since then, a white Gentile, I think, who owns the Colts, came out and said she's angry at the fact that minorities are running our country. I don't know if you heard this, but you know, and she was kind of, you know, throwing it at the Muslims. But I mean, still, just to have somebody of that stature come out and say something like that is pretty huge, and it shows that there is some rattling, you know, at the top levels, where, you know, eventually people who have money, who are ingrained, are going to realize that, you know, there's a huge fracture here, and, you know, it's going to be what side are you on, you know. And I think we need to really not only get the masses, but we have to kind of get the people in power who have the potential to support us to become unhinged from their loyalties to the state and to, you know, it's so hard because, like you said, materialism, I mean, really is the dominating factor, and money is everything.
Yeah,
but
I mean, you made a lot of, so many good points.
Just
I'm going to interrupt you. Wanted to make this – I don't want to interrupt you, but you make so many good points. I have to say that's one thing that has driven me over the years. I kind of – every time I do stuff, I kind of hope that maybe this will be the one thing I do where I end up getting a call a few days later from some, you know, guy who's, you know, has some money and we can actually, you know, be funded and do some stuff. You know, the fact is that so many times we're really pessimistic on these white – you know, these kind of – these deracinated whites, or, you know, certainly there's examples of ones who consciously sell out. But, you know, as much as we can knock these rich whites for kind of not having any racial awareness, at least outwardly showing it, you know, the fact is that until we can show them that there is something that they can, you know, get behind, and that our race has a pulse, I mean, they'd have to be out of their minds right now to go and to go and just, you know, get behind us, because, you know, they would be just losing everything. They have to see it, and I think you're exactly right. If they see us start to, you know, and especially I'd like to think that there would be a few out there that if they saw people like me, and hopefully more here in the future, that really just, you know, put it all on the line and just try to do what they can, and are just struggling and fighting the system and trying to do something, that they it might strike them, you know, in the heart, that they might, you know, want to get behind our efforts. And that's why we have to be professional. That's why I do think it's important to maintain professionalism, why this homeless thing might not be the best thing to go after. But, you know, you mentioned, I actually haven't heard that story yet. I know that the owner of the Colts, Mr. Irsay, he's had some problems, I guess, with, like, alcoholism and pills. And I know he's very well liked, though, in Indianapolis, just like, you know, you mentioned that statement, but, you know, this city here that I live right outside of Cincinnati, I mean, had Marge Schott years ago that was forced to sell her team because of some statements she made. And, you know, the thing is, though, I think that when they do this kind of thing, and honestly, I'm not familiar with that, but it wouldn't surprise me if they try to make him, you know, try to make him sell the Colts now. And I mean,
yeah, it may be the wife of it may be his wife. You know, I don't know the details of the story, but it was on the news, and it definitely caught my ear when I heard what she had said about how minorities are running the country. You know, so I mean, it just goes to show that there is a little bit of resistance that's starting to form. And, you know, it's possible for this to go both ways, to get our people at the bottom and at the top to coalesce into a real force. It's just going to take a lot of effort. And, you know, I got an article here by Edgar Steele. He was a guy that, you know, fought right till the end. I guess he I don't know what actually happened. I mean, some people are probably saying he was killed. I don't know what happened. I mean, he died recently too, right?
They set him up. You know, they tried to say that he hired a hitman to kill his wife. His wife just like maintained that, you know, much of the evidence that they came up with was stuff that, you know, it was a complete fix, and just shows you how they have just so much power to control and manipulate this legal system. And, you know, look what I'm going through now. I mean, I could use, you know, they anyone, it's amazing how almost as how they go after people who, you know, not even white nationalists, but just the way the Jews react against people who take action or talk about taking action against their banking power over time, how they take action against white nationalists who are, you know, trying to learn the law and become engaged in, you know, like Matt Hale, he was the one that was trying to do that, and Edgar Steele,
right.
You know, I mean, and, you know, you look at Gene Traficant. I mean, the fact that, you know, they sent him away to prison for 7 years, and that took a hell of a toll on his health. And with Edgar Steele, I mean, he ended up dying in prison. You know, so, yeah, I mean, we have to have equal progress, though. We can't just, and you're exactly right. It's not going to be easy. It's not something that, you know, we're going to have success all the time. And one thing, too, the system is going to react, and we're going to have to react with it and always remain flexible and being able to adjust to what they do to react to us. So,
you know, there was a guy named Bill White, and he had a website called Overthrow.com. I used to go to it all the time, and I have a printout of an Edgar Steele article called "The Truth Shall Make You Mad, The Jews Oppose Truth, Thus We Must Oppose the Jews," and it's a really good article by Steele, and it's got a great introduction by Bill White. I don't know what you thought of Bill White. I mean, I always wanted to get somebody else's opinion because I thought he was a great guy out there making noise as well. And I don't even know, is he still around?
I'm like, not really that familiar with him.
No.
Just like I wasn't that really that familiar with the Ramsey guy. I have to say, I mean, I started becoming like, you know, really engaged on the internet like in 2012. It was after I resigned from the Alliance. Before then, I was just basically engaged in public activity. I didn't really get on the internet a lot. And,
right.
You know, and one of the reasons I didn't get on the internet is because of the fact that, you know, at the time I, you know, am trying to do the best I can as an activist here in my area, as well as many other people that were still with the NA, and I did not want to get on the internet and essentially have to defend someone who was extremely hard to defend, which was this chairman Eric Glebe, which many of us that stayed on tried to do our best despite this void at the top. So that was one reason, probably the main reason I stayed off the internet, aside from the fact that I just, you know, more engaged to be public. Let me make this example while we're here on the radio. I was going to do this earlier. You know, as far as just an example of the system and many in it, now not so much the Jews, because they're willing to do whatever they need to do, but while we've been talking, and during maybe earlier in the broadcast, maybe about an hour ago, maybe people might have noticed there was like some wind, maybe a little bit of that picked up on the phone. I was actually out this yet another Holocaust / World War II movie being released this weekend called Fury. And I was actually out as we've been talking, this was like an hour ago, flying the parking lot. Now, when I was leaving the parking lot there here during the interview,
you're doing this as we're doing the interview? Man, you're like a Superman.
Well, anyway, I had meant to do it last night, but the movie theater wasn't even that crowded, and I'd printed out about 85 flyers. I actually drafted up a couple of flyers, you know, directed at this movie and just the overall, you know, just constant brainwashing, you know, of the public. But, you know, put some of my campaign stuff at the bottom of it. But as I was leaving the parking lot there, one of these mall cops, I guess, I don't know if he'd been called in or what, he came up and took a flyer off one of the cars. Now, I drove away. I mean, as I was talking to you, I was like, God, you know, all those damn things are going to be taken off now. So I went and parked a ways away and continued talking with you. I drove back by there here probably about 20 minutes ago before I came back, got back home here, and the flyers were still all in the car. So this shows that most in the system are just a bunch of lazy clock watchers, and we can outwork these people. That guy didn't feel, even though he didn't agree probably with it, was, you know, probably angry about the fact that I'd flyered the parking lot. And
maybe he agreed with it. Maybe he agreed with the flyer.
Well, maybe he did, but the way most of these it's amazing how, like, these employees of Walmart or whatever, you know, if you fly a parking lot, even though that company wouldn't, you know, they pay them $7 an hour, you know, they know them by some number and not their name, they're willing to come out and argue with you about putting flyers on cars and defend the Walmart, you know, it's like, or defend the mall against the mall cop. But more than likely, the guy probably was annoyed that I violated their, you know, these people think they can create these policies. When it's actually had Supreme Court decisions that if you're a public place and you're open, if you're a private business and you open, you know, to a parking lot, that you have the right to go on their property. Because what the hell does our First Amendment mean if you can't spread the message where the public congregates? And the Supreme Court has agreed with that. But these people think they can make these rules and they can enforce these rules that they have about not flying in the parking lot. Well, anyway, you know, I'm sure he was probably annoyed if he wasn't in severe disagreement with the message, he was probably annoyed that it fired the parking lot, but they don't feel like going and taking all of them off. Now, some of these self-righteous dumbasses will, and some of these, obviously the Jews, but, you know, we can outwork these people if we have the will to go out there and do it. And that's just a good example of just something tonight. I was observing tonight as I was conducting the interview. But
you know, it's funny because my friend just told me, and we're running out of time. I wanted to take calls. There were a lot of calls, but I mean, it's you were in such a role. I just wanted to let you go. But my
friend
told
me, you're being nice. I'm sorry if I talk.
I wanted to give you as much exposure as you can get. And my buddy told me, you know, they have these Comedy Central roasts. I guess they had one of Chevy Chase, I think, who I think I'm pretty sure is Jewish. But in there, there was like a line where, you know, they said it was some SNL person and they made up a fake diary that they had found. And, you know, the line was that when Chevy Chase first talked to her, I don't know if it was Chevy Chase or Bill Murray. I'm pretty sure it was Chevy Chase. But they said that the first thing he said was that the Holocaust is bullshit. And this is like Comedy Central. I mean, so, you know, it's like even the Jews, like, on TV, and this happens at South Park all the time, Family Guy, you know, it's like they know that this is the last sacred cow that can be attacked. And, you know, if they're going to be sensationalist and funny, you know, they have to kind of, like, go against, you know, their own construct, you know. So it's just, I don't know, I found that funny, like, and there's a bunch of other things that I could get into, but we're really running out of time. We've been in, like,
Let me just make a quick comment. I mean, could that also be, though, could that also be, Dana, that they're just so arrogant that they know they can say things and that our people are so brainwashed that they're not going to say, hey, you know, because, I mean, everything that I'm standing up for in this campaign, talking about Jewish power, Jewish control, everything, you know, that this network, you know, Renegade, you know, whether it be Kyle or any of the other hosts, you, talk about relative to Jewish power, Jews themselves have said. And you know, we have to, you know, find a way to, you know, get through this brainwashing. And I think that's the kind of stuff, you know, you've got to always remember their arrogance at the end of the day has always come back to bite them in the ass. And, you know, maybe we'll one day be thankful that our people were so so sheepish that it got them to the point where it brought out this arrogance again. And this arrogance has, it really has in the past. It's been something that, that in the end has driven the people against them. And
yeah, I mean, I agree with you. I think it's boasting and, you know, it's hubris. And, you know, this is, they feel so comfortable in their, you know, positions of power, in their gated communities, you know, in the halls of academia that, you know, they feel like they've got such a lock on things that they can even make fun of themselves now, to the point where, you know, they can slow, you know, they can even drop little pieces of truth, even if it's in a sarcastic manner, and let it out there, and the stupid goyim and Gentiles aren't going to, you know, they're not going to pick up on it. But, you know, people are picking up on it. And, you know, I mean, there is, I think there is a tide that is forming, and hopefully we'll get to see this in our lifetime happen, because that's really what I live for, man. But, yeah, it was an honor talking to you. I wish I was able to get to some callers. I want to announce there is going to be an event around Connecticut that I'm going to go to. Daniel Goldhagen is going to be speaking on the rise and threat of global anti-Semitism. He's the author of Hitler's Willing Executioners at the Guilford Free Library on 67 Park Street, November 23rd.
All right, man. Well, you know,
1:30
to some...
Let me see. Is it 11? No, 1:30 to 3:30. So I'm going to go and tape this thing, and I'm going to stand up and, you know, bring up, you know, McDonald and Stalin's Willing Executioners and just the whole Judeo-Bolsheviks and the reasons why National Socialists were targeting them, because they were water carriers for communism, and, you know, they cannot deny the fact of history there. So I'm going to stand up to this guy. If anyone wants to come down, feel free. Yeah, I just wanted to support you, man, and give you some more exposure. Is there any closing words you have for the people?
Anyone who's in Connecticut, who's in within traveling distance, you know, of that, and you call yourself a white nationalist, you better be there. I mean, that's really great that you're doing that, Dana. I mean, that's what. But these people have to be challenged. I mean, what does the leftist, what do the Jews do to these, you know, conservatives? I mean, even our people, or even, well, I guess Jared Taylor is one of these people, or, you know, they never talk about the Jews. But I mean, even, you know, the leftists have come and you know, interrupted their talks, whatever, and you know. There's a way to do it that, you know, again, these are one of these things we can do, and you know, very little chance of any kind of real kickback. I've done that over the years many times, show up at these Holocaust, little these speakers or whatever, and just, you know, ask them some inconvenient questions, hit them out of left field, and that right there is, that's resistance, man, and that is, I guarantee, I'm sure you'll make some waves, I'll make a point to, hopefully, when you come back and give us a report on it.
Yeah, I'm going to try to
get
it on tape. I got to buy a camera and just see how it goes. But, yeah, man, I mean, you're really you're doing the work. You're doing the hard labor. So I wanted to give you props.
Dude, do it. Even if you can't get a camera, dude, do it. Do it even if you can't get a camera. I mean,
we got to get these things on tape, though, to upload them onto the internet so that people can see it on YouTube, and, you know, they can see that there's resistance and it's growing, and people are not afraid to say the truth that needs to be said. So, Robert, man, thanks for coming out tonight. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks, Dana.
And that's it. I mean, if you want to give out any information, how to contact
email
you.
Email address is whiteguard.us. Whiteguard.us is the website. I think it might actually redirect to like thewhiteguardrightnow.com. But and then you get PO Box 6083, Florence, Kentucky 41022. Email address is Ransdell. That's RANSDELL 4FORUS Senate 2014 at yahoo.com. I also want to just urge anyone, you know, listening to this network too, to make sure that certainly if you're going to think about sending me any kind of donation, certainly I would rather you go first and donate to Kyle here. He helped me with getting the website up at a fraction of the cost it would have cost me to put, you know, go to a non-racialist or whatnot, and you know, he certainly you know, can use any kind of support as well. So, and as far as I'm going with the campaign, especially after I was had my money, you know, returned, you know, I'm all right as far as money goes for the rest of this campaign. So, you know, as much as I'd appreciate and put to use any kind of donations, make sure that you know, you don't forego helping out Kyle as well, because you know, this network has given me the platform on a number of occasions, and you know, it needs to be supported.
All right, man. Thanks a lot tonight, man. I'm just gonna hang up, and I'll.
All right.
We will convene later. All right.
All right. Thanks a lot,
brother.
Thanks a lot, everybody.
Hey,
thanks.
Yep. Take care.